Hello, this is News Director Larissa Donovan, continuing the Meet the Candidate interview series, and joining me on the phone today is incumbent for Minnesota House 2A, Matt Grossel. How's it going today, Matt?
It's going great, Larissa. I couldn't complain a bit.
Oh, yeah, wonderful weather we're having now that it's dried up a bit.
Oh, it looks like it might be threatening to rain some more, but hopefully it'll burn off.
All right. So why don't we learn a little bit about you, like how long you've lived in this area?
Well, you know, I grew up in northern Minnesota, grew up in Deer River, Minnesota, actually, not very far from Bemidji. And I've lived here just about all my life, except for the time that I served in the U.S. Army. And then I moved back to the area. And so I've lived in the District 2A area. Started in Black Duck as a police chief there, and then went to Clearwater County and worked as a deputy sheriff in 2002. Started in 2001 in Black Duck, and then moved to the Bagley, Clearwater County area in 2002. And finally now I'm living in the Clearbrook area.
All right. And prior to your election to the Minnesota House 2A, did you have any other political campaigns or interests?
No, you know, I have never run for a political office in my life. You know, I just have been working, serving the community in the law enforcement capacity, and trying to make it a better place, a safer place for my family and my neighbor's family, and you know, and everyone. So, you know, I guess I have been in public service for quite a number of years, but never did I think I would ever run for a political office until 2016.
And what really inspired you to get involved?
Well, I guess, you know, after I had to retire early from injuries sustained in the line of duty, I and my children, we started doing mission work abroad. And when Dave Hancock was going to retire because of his wife's health, and he wanted to spend more time with her, and you know, I admire him for that, and they're both very wonderful people, Dave and his wife. And he asked me if I would run, and I told him that you know, to work as a soldier and to work as a law enforcement officer was a calling, and if this to run for this political office wasn't a calling, I wasn't going to do it because I wouldn't be in it for the right reasons. And so through some praying and fasting, it was made very clear to me that, you know, step up, that it's time to roll up your sleeves. It's time to get back into the fight to serve the people around you, and try to do the best you can to make it a better place for all of us.
So over the past biennium, I'm sure it's been a lot of stuff you've done, but what are some of the proudest accomplishments in the past biennium, and what would your goals be during the next biennium if reelected?
Well, you know, the things that I work hardest on, you know, are the public safety issues, and then infrastructure type issues that the area needs. And we've gotten a lot of things done over the, you know, it's been a struggle this last biennium, but I was able to get some good projects put in place for several of the communities. One for the Baudette Arena up there, we got some work done for them so that they could utilize that facility to as much as they can to the maximum. And then also is working on the initiative program to help keep that moving for our Red Lake Nation. The Beltrami County, as you know, is looking at a fiscal cliff, and they're struggling. And the Red Lake Nation has been working along with them and the state to try to keep this initiative program going, where they take the full responsibility of the child placement and such. And so the work that I was doing, and Senator Utke, was to get this facility built up in the Red Lake community to help house the personnel that they're going to need to hire so that they can take on this work taken off of the hands of Beltrami County, and it's going to help not only Beltrami County and the Red Lake Nation, but the surrounding counties as well. So it is good work that, you know, it's in. I was able to get people from across the aisle and my own side of the aisle to work together to get it into the bonding bill, and that is something that we hope to get accomplished this year. But you know, again, it's going to take people working together, and you know, I've done all that I can to. I got chairs of two committees who are both DFL to support my bills, and I've got plenty of other people from across the aisle to support this bill as well. So we had good bipartisan work done on it, and now we just need to get the other things out of the way to stop interfering with the bonding bill. And so we can agree on an amount in these very difficult times, very tough financial times as well for the state and everybody. But to get that work done, and that project is one of them that will keep going.
All right. My next question is, as a legislator, you represent our area and our voice in St. Paul. What are some of the key issues your constituents have discussed with you?
You know, there's always the child care, and that is something that all over the place, you know, we have some businesses and such, but people are struggling to find good child care for them and good safe places. And I believe as a state, I think we've regulated and mandated so many good people out of business. You know, we've done our best to try to deal with the child care issue. You know, we try to cut down on waste and fraud and the abuse of child care assistance to make sure that the money that's going out is going to the right places. And also, we're continuing to improve the record keeping requirements. You know, that's a step forward in the 2019 HHS bill and are requiring safety bonds for providers who receive a lot of CCAP, you know. But we continue to work to improve the child care and to look at, you know, what are some of the, and get rid of some of the unnecessary and burdensome regulations on providers. There's a lot of good people out there that, you know, we're not, our rural areas are not the big metros. We don't have these great big facilities for child care. We have to depend on each other out here, and we have to be able to work with each other so that these families, these working families, have access to good child care, and that's something that we're going to continue to work on.
All right. My next.
I know one of the other big topics, as you probably heard, and you know, and you've you hear about it around the Bemidji area and around the whole state, is this Line 3 project. You know, that is something that will bring $2.6 billion, maybe more, of private investment. Private investment, not from the state, not from anything else, but private investment into our northern Minnesota and into the state. And that will that is a big thing that will put a lot of families to work immediately. And it'll be a shot in the arm for all the communities along that route. And it's not only important for the economy, it is important for environmental safety. This line has been studied for years. It has met all the requirements that have been put in front of it. And it is something that needs to be done. The Obama administration agreed that it needs to be done. Our governor, you know, in conversation with him, he said that it was going to be done. When I talked to him at a trades union hall, Carpenters Union Hall in St. Paul, he said it was going to be done. And now I'm just waiting for him to decide, you know, let's get this work going. It's going to help. It's going to help all of our trades, our 49ers, our laborers, everybody. And it's going to help our communities. It's going to help our schools. It's going to help with tax relief, for property tax relief throughout the area. And it's going to bring money into the area for our small businesses and our small communities. They're dying out here, and this would be a great way to get it moving right away.
Are there any other issues that constituents have brought up before I move on to the next question, Matt?
You know, I come from the law enforcement field, and I've heard a lot of our investigators who are dealing with child pornography crimes, and they're screaming for help. They're screaming for help. If you look at our state statute, it is so weak. It is so weak that these people that are perpetrating on children are getting literally a slap on the wrist, and they're back out in the community. I'm sure you probably heard the one incident from the Beltrami County area where the individual received very little as far as a sentence on child pornography, came back, murdered his girlfriend, and left the child in northern Itasca County for dead, you know, just to die in a shack out there after victimizing the child. And I've been working on the child pornography legislation that I'm still trying to get heard. This last biennium, you know, I get told, well, the COVID hit. Well, you know what? The COVID hit a lot of places, but I see a lot of legislation moving forward. Why isn't this, you know, why can't I get a hearing for this child pornography bill? Instead of our investigators having to try to get their cases in front of a federal prosecutor, we should have a statute in place that makes sure that they can bring charges against these individuals who are perpetrating on our children, and make sure that they have the tools that they need. And my legislation is almost a mirror of the federal statute, and it would be something that could be rolling freely right away.
Okay. My next question is a bit open-ended, so bear with me a bit. What sort of values do you have that guide you in your decision-making?
Well, you know, my values are very simple. My values are serving my God first, my country and my family and my neighbors. You know, I look at this job not as a feather in my cap or a pat on the, or to ask for pats on the back, but to serve. I've done some studies and such with my pastor, and Jesus on leadership. That is something that we need to look at, and that a lot of us need to look at, because you serve. You have to be willing to be the servant before you can be a good leader, as far as I'm concerned. And I'll be the first one to tell you that I have made my mistakes in my days, and that I have failed a lot of times. But my job as a legislator is to serve the public that I represent, the people that elected me. I'm not there for them to serve me. I am there to serve them. So the values that I have, like I said, I serve my God first, my country, my family, my neighbors. That is what I'm called to do, and that is what I'll continue to do.
All right. My next question is on COVID-19. What are your thoughts on the legislature's response to COVID-19? And what do you think of the situation that's playing out right now?
Well, I guess which situation is playing out right now?
Because, well, the bonding bill delays the executive powers.
Oh,
take your pick.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I'll take my pick. You know, COVID is real. COVID is a virus. It is out there, and it is very damaging to our most vulnerable, and that is our elderly and our people who have underlying health conditions. I mean, I look at it like this. I have very serious respiratory issues. So I'm one of those people that, could it hit me and have some severe effects, damaging effects on me? Sure. But, you know, I look at how it was handled, and I'm not happy with it. the very people that we needed to protect, you know, I don't believe they were protected the way they should. And that is why we have 80% of our fatalities are from our long-term care facilities. And that's, you know, that shows that we didn't do the decisions that were made by the state were poor. And I've been talking about that, and they've already got me on record publicly saying that, you know, those are some bad decisions, because to put COVID infected people back into the long term care facilities, the very people who can fall subject to it so readily, that's the wrong move. That's the wrong answer. And as far as how it was handled, the models that were used, I mean, they've been so far off that it's almost ridiculous that they're still using any of that information and basing their decisions on bad models, on bad information. People keep saying follow the science. I have followed the science. I have drawn from people that know more about this stuff than I do. I'm not in the medical field. So I have listened to and done some research as far as people who are against closing people and shutting people down, people who are saying that, you know, we need to have the healthy out there working. We need to have the kids in school. And also, you've got professionals with degrees coming out their ears saying one thing, and then you have a group of them saying another thing. Who are we supposed to listen to? You know, but I'm looking at countries that didn't shut down and states that didn't shut down. They're doing quite well. They're doing a lot better than Minnesota has. And so people say follow the science. I wish a lot of people would take that just what they're saying and put it into practice, because you've seen what has happened to our economy. Our economy is destroyed right now. There's so many businesses that will not open again. And these are people's livelihoods that they've worked hard all their lives to put together. There was no reason, as far as I'm concerned, that we needed to shut things down so long. To get a good look at it at first, you know, everybody agreed. Let's pull back on the reins. Let's see what we're dealing with here. And then adjust it and get people back to work. And we could have done that, and we still could do that. I mean, our party, our GOP party, Minority Leader Doubt has been working with the governor on being able to open things back up incrementally to do it safely. But it's fallen upon deaf ears. It's just not willing to do it. And, you know, there's a lot of other things that I'm looking at, the way things were handled. And it is frustrating, to say the least. Again, you know, you asked about the bonding bill. The way our economy is right now, you know, would it be a good idea to have a bonding bill? And if we have a bonding bill, it would be very limited, you know, to be wise and good stewards of our state resources. It would be very wise to have a smaller bonding bill, if any, and then get this Line 3 project moving. That will also help. And, you know, when there are other bills that are like the tax bill that was put in with the bonding bill, from what I understood, according to the Constitution, you cannot do that. And so if we want to talk about a bonding bill, then let's talk about a bonding bill. Let's get it passed. Get one that is appropriate for these times and get it passed. Let's stop playing silly games and putting other things in there to try to, you know, that will, you know, is going to throw a wrench in it. You know, it's going to be a poison pill, and that you won't get our votes for it. We want to support. We want the infrastructure work to be going, but we're not going to compromise and put our citizens further and further and further into a deficit and into debt. That is just not the way to do things.
All right, Mr. Grosso. Well, I had one more question on child care, but I think you already covered it. So that's all I have for you today. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me, Mr. Matt Grosso, for House 2A.